discussed last week, what is the technical difference between Malachim Nitzvichu Gufa and Yipsik Reisha in terms of definitions. And we said that the most common explanation is that which is expressed by the Kesef Mishnah, that Malachim Nitzvichu Gufa, you're doing the Malacha, and you're doing it fully with full awareness, but you happen to have a different purpose in mind. While Psik Reisha, you're doing an action, and that action brings about another action, which you don't have intent to do, and that second action is the Malach. But another very significant difference, and it's a complex difference, is that Malach HaShem Yitzchich LeGufa is probably a Shabbos concept, exclusively. We discussed a little bit whether it extends also into Shemitah, where you have similar Malachas, very possibly not. There is some involvement of that term in other contexts of halacha, but for the most part, it's basically a Shabbos concept. And therefore, could more easily be understood as a function either of Malachas Machsheves, or the Mishkan, or some combination of both, or Shabbos's particular Maisa focus, as we discussed a little bit. All of that could explain it. Davar Sheino Misgavein is not exclusively a Shabbos concept, and Psik Reisha is not exclusively a Shabbos concept. However, it has particular relevance within Hilchos Shabbos, and therefore, Malachas Machsheves may or may not be a part of the discussion. In other words, it can't be that the whole concept only exists because Malachas Machsheves, because it applies in other areas of Torah also. I shouldn't say can't be, but it seems unlikely. But on the other hand, Malachas Machsheves may play a role in making it more prominent or play out a little bit differently in Hilchos Shabbos than it does in other areas of halacha. So essentially, just to get the building blocks down tonight, that essentially what you have is Psik Reisha is really not an appropriate title for the sugya, even though that is what we put on the sheets. That's more a colloquial way of referring to it, because really the sugya is really Davar Sheino Misgavein. That's really what the issue is. And Davar Sheino Misgavein is sometimes defined as Psik Reisha or not Psik Reisha. And then Psik Reisha could either be Nichole or not Nichole, as we'll talk about. So Psik Reisha comes into the conversation later. First, the issue is Davar Sheino Misgavein. So Davar Sheino Misgavein, if you're doing action A, and there's a likelihood that action A could create action B, could provoke action B, so that would be a Davar Sheino Misgavein. And it was Machlokas in the Gemara of Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. If you're learning Daf Yomi, already a couple of masechtos past this, but in Beitza, this Machlokas appears a couple of times. So, and throughout Shas it appears many times, but a couple of times in Beitza, so it's the most recent Daf Yomi references. So, according to Rav Shimon, that's not your problem, essentially. Davar Sheino Misgavein is Mutter. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it is your problem. Davar Sheino Misgavein is Aser. Now, one thing that's also interesting is we have a concept of grama also. Grama in Hilchos Shabbos, the Gemara says in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Chaf that grama is pater on Shabbos. What that means in terms of halacha l'maisa is a discussion. Does that mean it's mutter? Does that mean it's only mutter mokum tzarech gadol? It means asim mitter rabbanan? That's itself a question. But on some level, grama is not a full-blown chi of Shabbos. But we're not 100% sure what grama means. So you might have thought that grama means that if I do something indirectly, that's called grama. But that's not a great definition because that sounds very much like Davar Sheino Misgavein. You know, here we see Davar Sheino Misgavein is a bigger issue. It's a machlokas, and Psik Reisha is going to make it not a machlokas. So the fact that you're not doing action B directly, but you're doing action A, and action A causes action B, apparently that's not enough to call it grama. Question about that?
Just because the classic example here is pouring water onto pavement.
Mm-hmm. For the purpose of... Okay, so that's...
Right, but... Now, if the person... I don't know. If the person does actually have kavana to get onto the grass, so that's...
So we'll get to that a little bit exactly as to how that how those terms play out, because it's a little bit complicated what's an example of what. So we'll hold off on whether that example fully fully fits into. Yeah, so let's get some terms down first. But it seems that this is not grama. You could have thought on its own that this is grama. If I ask you, what does grama mean? You could have said, this is, might be it. But apparently not. And what is grama in Halacha Shabbos is a topic of debate among Achronim. And just to mention two of the theories. So one theory is that it means that you're not the only player, that there is another player mixed in. And maybe it's a natural force. So, for example, the Gemara in Maseches Bava Kamma talks about the malacha of Zoreh. Right, so Zoreh is one of the Lamitas malachas. Basically means if I throw something into the air and use the wind to separate the psolas from the ochel, the stuff I don't want from the stuff I want, the lighter stuff flies away, and the heavier stuff falls to the ground. So I'm using the wind to be my divider here. So that's a malacha. So the Gemara says that that should really be a problem with grama, the Gemara says in Bava Kamma, because the Gemara asks, let's say I start a fire that way, or let's say I direct a fire that way. So if the wind is blowing, and I'm also going to fan the fire together with the wind, and I need both, Baruch Mesoyoso, so the Gemara says you'd be Pater and Hilchos Nezikin, because that would be called the grama. So the Gemara asks over there, that doesn't that basically match the malacha of Zorah, and yet apparently you're chayiv for doing that. So says the Gemara, malachas machsheves asra Torah. So what does that mean, malachas machsheves asra Torah? The Rishonim debate what it means. One possible reading is that it means that apparently Hilchos Shabbos, malachas machsheves is a chumra as well. We usually relate to malachas machsheves as a kula, that it patters us from things, that there are situations where we would have been chayiv, but malachas machsheves comes in and patters us. But apparently it's not the only kind of scenario you have. Maybe we'll talk about Malachas Machsheves maybe next week. Maybe we'll give that some, especially once we've seen these two topics, maybe we'll give Malachas Machsheves some direct attention. But this is an example of Malachas Machsheves L'chumra, that something apparently would have been Pater, but because Hilchos Shabbos has Malachas Machsheves as a factor, so then you become chayiv. So one possibility in the Rishonim is that it means that this was your plan, that when you have this plan and your plan is fulfilled, so then, because of Malachas Machsheves, you're chayiv for it, even if in other areas of life you wouldn't be chayiv. Another possibility is that the Gemara is just saying that we have a list of the Malachos, and the Malachos have protexia, basically, if they're mentioned in the Mishkan, so then if they were involved in the Mishkan, so then the Mishnah lists them, and then they're Malachos, even if they may otherwise not follow the rules 100%. I think we mentioned this a little bit last week, talking about Borer, that the Baal HaMoreh had the question that Borer should be a malacha shenitzricha legufa, and yet it's still a malacha. So there as well, you saw the same kind of answer, that even though the malacha by itself, according to him, not everyone agreed with the premise, but that the malacha itself maybe doesn't comport with rules, but because it's on the list, so it's on the list. So too, maybe that's what it means by Zorah. So in any event, but the whole premise of that Gemara is that grama seems to be that if you're not doing it by yourself, but it's really some natural force is doing it and you're provoking it, so then that's a grama. Another interpretation of grama, which is going to come up, is that if there's a time delay, then it's called grama. If what you do does not immediately bring about a certain action, and it happens later, so then that's already called grama. And when it comes to our scenarios of Pesik Reisha, so there isn't really a time delay. It happens essentially automatically. So that may distinguish it from grama. So in any event, so you have this machlokus that Reb Shimon says, the davar shein miskaven, it's apparently different than grama, but davar shein miskaven is potter. And Reb Yehuda holds saucer. Reb Yehuda holds you're still you're prohibited to do this. And then the Gemara tells us that Maid the Reb Shimon Bipsik Reisha, that if it's a situation that's vade going to happen, so then Reb Shimon would agree that that's Asura as well. And that's why we had that kasha last week, that seems to be a better comparator for Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, because Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa essentially is always Pesik Reisha, in the sense that you always know what's going to happen because you're trying to do it. It's not the question whether it's going to happen or not. So really, if we want to compare Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa to Davar Shein Miskaven, we should compare it in the Pesik Reisha scenario, in which case it seems like Davar Shinu Misgavin is worse because you're chayiv in that scenario, or it's aser in that scenario, as opposed to Melachin Shinu Tzvich Lagufa. So there are many little machlokas within the Rishonim about whether Hilcha Shabbos is a defining factor here, and that affects a number of issues. So, for example, what's the default position? Is it that really Reb Shimon is right, that Davar Shinu Misgavin is mutter, and maybe Reb Yehuda is an Isser Derabbanan? And maybe he agrees in theory that Davar Shinu Misgavin is mutter. Or maybe the other way around, that maybe he holds Sasser Deraisa, but Reb Shimon agrees, so what does he agree with? Does he agree that it's Isser Deraisa? Does he agree that it's Isser Derabbanan? So there's a lot of debates among the Rishonim about issues like that. What exactly? Is there a difference between Shabbos and Kol HaTorah Kula? That's some of the Rishonim maintain that really Davar Shinu Misgavin would only be Chayiv in Isser Misa, not in Isser Lav, and Shabbos would be excluded because of Melachas Machsheves, so that's where there's a whole Machlokas. So again, Melachas Machsheves could play a role, even though this is a topic that appears B'Kol HaTorah Kula. Just to give an example, it'll come up later, so you'll see if you look through the Mar Makomos. So one of the other contexts where it's mentioned in the Gemara is Gemara in Zvachim, which talks about the prohibition to extinguish the fires on the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says that if somebody wants to be Nodev Yayin, he wants to also bring wine as part of his carbon, so what does he do? So he should sprinkle the wine onto the Mizbeach. But and the Gemara discusses, but how's he going to do that without violating the Isser of extinguishing flames? If you're going to throw liquid onto the flames, so then you're going to extinguish them. So in that context, the Gemara discusses, is it Davar Shinu Misgavin, is it Psik Reish, is it not? So we'll come back to that, but that's an example of where you find this coming up in other non-Shabbos contexts. The Gemara talks about a Nazir, if a Nazir is going to stroke his beard, he's going to curl his hair, so then you have to worry that he's going to pull out hairs. That's a psik ratio. So you have a couple of applications that are outside of Hilchos Shabbos. So to start off, let's ask the following question. So what is the reason for the heter, if there is one, according to Reb Shimon, what's the reason for the heter of Davar Shinu Misgavin? Why should we allow it? And I think there are a number of possibilities. You could probably have at least, let's say, six possibilities. But after we go through some of them, we could probably group them into two basic possibilities. Anybody want to take a stab at it? Why should it be? Why should a Davar Shinu Misgavin be excused? So one possibility is to say Melachas Machsheves. So that actually breaks down into two possibilities, because either you could say that it's a Melachas Machsheves, and therefore that explains how it plays out in Hilchos Shabbos, but not in other areas of Halacha. You'd have to have a different mechanism, which is possible. You know, maybe just it works differently in different areas of Halacha. Or there's actually a Ritva, and this will be a different scenario, that says that, I think I have it here somewhere, it's probably somewhere in the Mar Makomos. No, it's somewhere. There's a Ritva that maintains that you can make a binyan av from Shabbos to Chol HaTorah Kula. That therefore, yes, it's based on Melechas Machsheves, but then we derive from Melechas Machsheves to the rest of the Torah. So those are two possibilities that connect to Melechas Machsheves. What other possibilities could you maintain? So you could say that maybe the Maisa that you're doing is a Maisa Heter. Right? And especially since Shabbos were so Maisa focused, if you're doing a Maisa, that's not a Malacha. So the Malacha that's happening is not your Maisa, so you're off the hook for that reason. Another spin you could take on it is you could say that a person's involvement is defined by his kavana. If you have no kavana for this action that's happening, so then that's not your problem. That's not your problem. It's not your fault. Another possibility you could maintain is, and this is how some suggest, is there is a concept called misasik. Right? And the Gemara actually mentions misasik, and the Connect Gemara in Krisis mentions misasik in the context of Malachas Machshavas, even though misasik is also a Kol Torah Kula idea, but misasik has a special significance in Shabbos as well. That, how would you define misasik? So you could probably define it as follows. Let's say somebody turns on a light in Shabbos, somebody turns on a light switch. So there's at least four different ways you could do that. You could probably think of more. But there's at least four different categories of halacha that might be relevant. At the two extremes, say if the guy comes in and says, I don't care about Shabbos, I'm turning on the light, and there are Eidim and Hasra'ahu, that's Chil Shabbos B'mezim. Yeah, that's the worst type. On the other extreme, let's say somebody walks in the room and he trips, and he hits the light switch as he trips. So that's nothing. That's an onus that he didn't do at all on purpose. Has no liability for that. Let's say a shogeg. So a shogeg would be technically that he forgot that it's Shabbos, or he forgot that he can't turn on lights on Shabbos, or he never knew that it's Shabbos, never knew about lights. If he's missing a crucial piece of information, or forgot a crucial piece of information, so then that would be shogeg.
Automatic reflex also?
So that's why I think that is closer to misasik. Because misasik, I mean, you could quibble on the definition, but I think that that automatic reflex is in the category of misasik. That basically you're not even paying attention to what you're doing. You walk into a room and your habit is you turn on the light. So you're just going about your day doing other things, and you don't even have an awareness that you're turning on the light. So that seems to be misasik. And this is a concept, by the way, we find lakulam lachumra. So we find misasik by averus, you find misasik by mitzvos. To give an example, by mitzvos, so the Gemara has a discussion at the beginning of the second parak of Brachos. There's a discussion that, in general, some machlokas in many places in the Gemara, whether we say mitzvos tzrichos kavan or not. Right? So if you want to do a mitzvah and you want to fulfill it, you have to be aware of the mitzvah at the time. So, probably should phrase the question differently. If you have kavanah, if you have awareness, or don't have awareness, how crucial is that to the mitzvah? So, the Gemara wants to prove from the Mishnah, the beginning of the second parak of Brachos, the Mishnah there says that, let's say, somebody is Hayakari Batari, somebody happens to be reading the section of the Torah of Kriya Shema, and Zman Kriya Shema comes at the same time. So, says the Gemara, Im Kivin Libo Yatza. So, the Gemara says, Im Kivin Libo Yatza. So, apparently, you have to have intent. Our Mishnah seems to be saying that you can't fulfill Kriya Shema just by happening to be reading it at the time. But if you decide to flip on your Kavanah switch as soon as you realize, so then that'll work. So apparently you need to flip on your Kavanah switch. So the Gemara says, no, we want the Smach Locus to keep on going. It's too interesting, so don't use this Mishnah to settle it. Maybe the Mishnah means that he was Kairil Hegia, that he was just checking it over to see if there are any mistakes. So, Tzmachlok's Rishonim, what that means. Some Rishonim means that he wasn't reading it properly. He's really just looking at the letters to see if there's anything missing. So he wasn't reading it in a way that would have been acceptable for Kriya Shema. So therefore, he needs to fix that. That's what the Kavan is. But others explain, and the Rav explained it this way, they explained those Rishonim this way, that it means that that's misasik, that, you know, you're reading the words, but you're not even paying attention to the fact that you're reading the words, because you're looking for mistakes. So, yeah, you happen to be saying all the words, but it's so secondary to what you're doing that you're not even taking that in. So too, in the Avera sense, that if your person is misasik, I think automatic reflex would be in that category. You just go in the room, you happen to walk in the room, you're not thinking about the fact that you're turning on the light at the same time. So, in that context, so that's misasik. So the Gemara says misasik is essentially less than shogeg, because shogeg, a person is chayv a korban. If you're mechal Shabbos b'shogeg, so you're chayv a korban. But misasik, you're pater from a korban. So misasik is a lower level. So there are those who associate this idea of associate this idea of Davar Shem Miskaven with Misasik. Right? That basically, whatever malacha is happening is not something you're really paying attention to. You're paying attention to action A, and action A brings about action B, so that's misasik. So, if you say like that, then you have to deal with something else. Rabbi Akiva Eiger and his tshuvas and Siman Ches. Rabbi Akiva Eiger has a tshuva where he maintains that misasik is a maisa avera. It's just pata mikarbon. The Gemara has a pasuk tell you that it's pata from a carbon, but it is an avera. So normally it doesn't have so many nafkaminas because most people aren't going to ask a shayla because they don't realize they're doing it in the first place. But if you call davreshin and miskavein misasik, then theoretically you could ask a shayla. You know that you're, that's the context really, that you know that what you're doing could provoke something else. So then if we call that misasik, Sir Bekiva Eger's position that it's a maisa avera would be a problem. So you'd have to deal with that. Not everyone accepts the Sir Bekiva Eger, but that's a possible issue. So that's another possible explanation for why Davrishin and Miskavein should be possibly off the hook. One of my Talmidim a few years ago suggested another somewhat complicated mahalach, but it's interesting, that maybe you should call this really a Safik Daraisa, right? That you're going to possibly, you're going to do an action that's possibly going to cause an Issur Daraisa. Right, so let's call that a Safik Daraisa. It's a whole discussion in the Rishonim, you know, what's the difference between this and Shogeg, what's the difference between this and a Safik, but maybe you could say like that, that this is essentially a Safik. So normally, if it's, we're dealing with Issurim Daraisa, so you would say Safik Daraisa L'chumra. But what he was suggesting is that some of the Rishonim assert that Safik Daraisa L'chumra is itself a principle midrabanan, that the Torah doesn't require us to be machmir and sveikis, only the rabbis do. So in this case, where it's removed enough, the rabbis weren't machmir. They didn't say that if you're already a step removed from the action itself, if you have an action and you don't know whether it's Asur Daraisa or not, so then Safik Daraisa L'chumra. But the action you're doing is already, now you're two steps removed because you're doing an action that's mutter. And it may provoke another action that's aser. So maybe that's even more of a remove than a straight out suffik iser. So maybe Chazal were not machmer in such a case. Yeah, that maybe the issue is like this, that maybe this is a variation on a suffik daraisa. Right? That normally, suffik daraisa l'chumra, what do I mean? It means like I have food and I don't know if it's tray for not. So to eat this food, I might be violating an Issur Daraisa. So the rule is Safik Daraisa L'chumra. But some of the Rishonim maintain that that rule is Drabanan. The Torah doesn't have a problem with you eating this. But Chazal came and said that under such a circumstance, you can't. So maybe Chazal weren't so machmir in this case because it's a step removed. That Chazal said, okay, you can't do the action that might be an Issur Daraisa. But to do an action that's for sure mutter, but might bring about an action that's an Issur Daraisa, that's maybe a greater degree of Safik, and maybe they weren't machmir on that. That was, in a sense, yeah, I guess it's a little bit different than a Sveik Sveika because there's really only one Safik, but the Safik's a little bit at a greater remove than you. So I think it would be hard to call it a Sveik Sveika because the response would be it's only one Safik, but it's similar to a Sveik Sveika in that, you know, some of the Rishonim understand that Sveik Sveika is basically a numbers game. Right, that a suffix is usually a 50% suffix. So if you have two sveikas together, it becomes a 25% suffix, and that's not enough to account. So here, too, you could say that the numbers shift, that when it's further removed, it's one thing to say don't do something that might be awesome. It's another thing to say don't do something that's for sure mutter because it may also provoke something awesome. So maybe Chazal were not machmer in that case. So essentially, we just said six different explanations as to why Davrishin and Miskavein might be mutter. Just to review, we said that maybe because the maisa you're doing is a maisa heter, and we're interested in maisim. Maybe you have no kavana, therefore that makes you fundamentally disconnected from the action. Maybe we should say that it's misasek. Maybe we should say it's because of Malachas Machshavis, and that's only about Shabbos. Maybe we should say Malachas Machshavis is a binyanav to call Torah Kula. Or maybe we should say this complicated approach about Safik Derabana, Safik Deraisa, L'chom Ra'olim Derabana. So that's a number of different suggestions, but we could basically boil it down into two. Right? We could say that basically it could mean that your Maisa is a Maisa Heter, and you're disconnected from Maisa Iser. Or you have a lack of kavana here, and that lack of kavana takes you off the hook. The maisa is a maisa hetter. What you're doing, your maisa is a maisa hetter. So this could, if you boil it down to these two possibilities, so this could help us to address the next question, which is, why do things change when it's a psikration? Why does psikration make a difference? Now, just to clarify exactly the scenario about that, so essentially, like we said, the Gemara says that we have this machlokas Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon, but maida Reb Shimon b' psikration, that if it's for sure going to happen, he agrees, no good. We don't know exactly if he holds the Nisar d'Oraisa, he holds the Nisar d'Rabbanan. Okay, but that's, he agrees that that's asur. Psikresha, as we know, comes from the example the Gemara gives, that if the kids want to play ball, they don't have a ball, the only way they can think of to get a ball is to cut the head off a chicken. I might be a little scared about those kids, but apparently that's the scenario that we're dealing with. So maybe they're going to come and say, listen, Abba, we didn't intend to kill the chicken. We just wanted to use his head. So we thought that we could cut his head off and then we'd give it back later. So to that you respond, psikresha of loyamus, where you think you could cut the head off, he's not going to die. Avadi's going to die. You knew that. So if that's for sure going to happen, so then that's a problem. So the question is, why is it a problem? What's the difference? If we had these six different reasons for possibly saying that Davar Sheino Misgavein is not your problem, why does psikresha make it worse? So that's a question we want to answer. But first, let's mention another important detail of the whole equation, that there's another level on our flowchart. That psikresha is not always a problem, but it's a question of whether it's nichalei or not. That in order for it to be a psikresha that is your problem, it has to be desirable. It has to be a psikresha de nichalei. So the question is, what does that mean? Is that an active requirement that it has to be nichalei in order for it to count? Or is it that if it's low nichalei, then you're off the hook? What's the difference? It's an explicit machlokas rishonim in Shabbos. Let's see if you look at the Mar Makomos. What if it's in the between? What if you're a parv about the whole thing? What if it's lo ichbasle? You don't care one way or another. So Rashi on Daf Ayin Gimel in Shabbos, Rashi says lo ichbasle is considered nichale. Sounds like it means that lo nichale gets you off the hook. But anything other than lo nichale, such as either nichale or you don't care, lo ichbisle, that's all on the hook. And Tosfos later on, Tosfos and Habona and Daf Kuf Gimel, Tosfos quotes the Aruch over there. Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos says that nichale is the problem. But if it's lo nichale, including lo ichbisle, then you're off the hook. And Tosfos quotes over there the Aruch, very important shita lahalacha. The position of the Aruch is that a psikresha de lo nichale is not even asur midrabanan. That this is an absolute requirement for it to be nichale, and that if it's not nichale, it's mutter completely, mutter even midrabanan. And this is generally, the Aruch's position is generally not accepted. We generally assume that a psikresha de lo nichale is asur midrabanan, but it certainly factors in the halacha. So you'll see many, many tshuvas when there are other issues that are reasons to be makel. So then, if it's also lo nichale, the fact that there was this voice in the Rishonim, the Aruch, who says that it's mutter legamri, we usually don't rely on that by itself, but it does factor into a snif lahakel when there are other reasons to be makel. So it's a very important sheet, this position of the Aruch. It does it plays a big role in halachic discussions, even though it doesn't actually represent the accepted halacha. So, with that background, so why does psikresha make a difference? Why should it matter if we said davar she'eino misgaven is pater? So why should it matter? So we could suggest, as the Achronim do, the Chaznish about this, and Reb Shimon in the Shari Yosher, Shimon Shkap was a great Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University. But he's slightly more well-known for his involvement in Tells. But the Sefer Shari Yosher, which is the same structure as the Shev Shmaisa, so he also addresses this. So you could say two basic approaches as to why it is that Psik Resha should be a factor to make things worse. Right? What's the difference? So how does Psik Resha change the game? So you could say like this. If you say that the main issue is that you don't have kavana for the malacha, so then we could say, all right, listen, you don't have kavana when you don't really know what's going to happen in the first place. But if you know it's going to happen, then it becomes very hard to argue that you're not responsible for it. Right? If your kid says that he wasn't eating the candy he's not supposed to eat, he was just opening up the wrapper and holding it up over his mouth while he was tilting his head back, and it just happened to fall in. Right? So that's not a very credible excuse. You can't really get off the hook that way. When you know it's for sure going to happen, then you can't say that wasn't your intent. If there was a good shot that it wasn't going to happen, all right, then maybe you could be believed to say that this is not your kavana. But when it's 100%, then you can't wipe your hands of it. That's one way to say it. So that would address itself more to the kavana-based explanations. That if you say that the davar sheino miskaven, as the phrase indicates, is mutter because of the lack of kavana, so we'll say essentially this is not a davar sheino miskaven anymore. This is miskaven. A other approach you could take is you could say that if I focus more on issues of my maisa being a maisa heter, right, that was one of the two broader categories we said. So if you say it's about your maisa being a maisa heter, so then you could say, yeah, but that's only true when it's not psik resha, but when it's for sure going to happen, so that essentially becomes one maisa. Right, I think we talked about this a little bit last week in a different context. Somebody says, I didn't shoot the guy, I just pulled the trigger, and then the gun shot the bullet, and that the gun shot the guy. It's the opposite of the NRA, right? You say people don't kill people, guns kill people. So we say that has no credibility, because you know that that's what happens. When you pull the trigger, the bullet comes out. So you can't, at some point, you can't divide the actions any further and say, I didn't make this happen. If A always leads to B, so then that's the action. So you can have a semantic question as to where do you draw the line between one action and two actions. So this will be the answer. The answer is that if they're always connected, so then that's one action. Even if you think you can break it down into discrete parts, the answer is you can't. That's when one always leads to the other, that's considered to be one action. So those are two mahalchim that you find in the Achronim to explain why psik resha makes a difference. And this also then affects the question of how nichale makes a difference. And also, what is nichale? Is nichale an active requirement and therefore excludes loich besle? Or is lo nichale an exemption and therefore that excludes loich besle? So you could say it according to either way. You could say that especially if you say that if you know it's going to happen, that's your problem. So then all the more so if you want it to happen. Right, so this kid who comes to you, your kid who comes to you and says he didn't know that the candy was going to fall in his mouth and he was going to swallow it. So especially when you know it's his favorite candy and it's predictable this is going to happen, then all the more so the fact that it's nichale solidifies the fact that he can't credibly disconnect himself from it when he wants it to happen and it was for sure going to happen. So then, boom, that's his action even if he did it through a different action. Alternatively, if you say that it's not about kavana, but it's about it being a separate maisa heter, so then you could separate maisa, and your maisa is maisa heter. So then you could say that that's only true when they're not for sure going to happen. But if it's for sure going to happen, and it's a psik resha, but it also happens to be lo nichale, so then maybe that makes it a malacha shenitzricha legufa. And in that case, again, they're really not so different, the two concepts, that they could overlap at that point. That if it's a psik resha, action A and action B become connected into one action. And if it's lo nichale, then you have a ptur of malacha shenitzricha legufa. In which case, presumably that's an ister midrabanan against the arach, right? Because malacha shenitzricha legufa is also midrabanan. And it would have to be actively nichalei, also against the arach. And it would have to be actively lo nichalei, not just lo ichbaslei wouldn't be enough. It has to be lo nichalei. So that's a basic introduction. There are a lot of other ramifications of this, which God willing we'll continue with tomorrow. Just to quickly review what we spoke about, so we basically laid out the elements here, that there is a machlokas from Shimon Reb Yehuda b'chol Torah kula, whether davar shenu miskaven is mutter or not. And if you say that it's mutter, so we mentioned six possible ways of understanding why it should be mutter. Either because your maisa is a maisa heter, and it's the other action that's an action of Isser, and especially for Shabbos applications, that's all the more relevant because we have such a maisa focus. Two, because you have no kavana for the action. Three, because we'll call it misasek, and then you have to deal with the Rebbe Akiva Eger, who says the misasek is still a maisa avera. Four, because of melachas machshavas, but that would only account for Shabbos, not for other applications, but maybe there are different nuances. Five, maybe melachas machshavas a binyanav to kol Torah kula. And six, the idea that maybe this is really a suffix, but it's a more extended kind of suffix, protracted kind of suffix, and therefore maybe in this kind of suffix, Chazal didn't aser, according to the opinion that Chazal are the ones who asered Sveikah D'Oraisa. And then we broke that down into two categories. We said that that represents a question of lack of maisa or a lack of maisa iser or a lack of kavana, and that those two possibilities could address the question of psik reisha. We discussed that psik reisha has a requirement of nichalei or a exemption of lo nichalei. The way you phrase it, nafkamina for where does lo ichbaslei fall in, that's machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, and the Arach has a position that lo nichalei is mutter legamri. So psik reisha could play a role either in that it makes the two maisim into one, and therefore lo nichalei is relevant only because it makes it into malach shenis rich legufa, or maybe it's there because of your kavana that you can't really claim to have no kavana when you knew for sure this was definitely going to happen. And then nichalei is all the more relevant because, especially if you knew it for sure going to happen and you want it to happen, then it's really not shaykh to disconnect you from it. So God willing, we'll pick up there from there tomorrow and talk about some of the applications again. So the next two nights, we'll have it at 7 o'clock. I don't know. All right, everyone should have a wonderful night.
Thank you.
Should be only good things.
You too.
And we'll see you then.